needed some music for Michael Perry to start the show today because he's our guest today. Always great to have him come by to talk with us about whatever he has going on in his life, be it books or talks. Right now, he's got a new PBS Wisconsin show coming. It's called Where I Come From, and I tell you what, I've had a chance to view it, and it's a wonderful watch, and you're going to enjoy hearing from Michael. As many of you know, he's the author of a number of books, some that I really like, Truck, A Love Story. I really enjoyed Population 485, and his new PBS Wisconsin special premieres tonight, so we're going to talk with him about that. What questions do you have for Michael? Experiences to share with him? I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And Michael Perry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Well, I enjoyed having a chance to get a sneak preview of this special, and I think it's different from some of your other ones. What were you trying to show viewers in this particular?
Well, I think what's interesting about this one is it wasn't about what I was trying to show viewers. It was someone else's vision, and they came and just sat me down a couple of times and talked to me in various spots around our little farm. And then took me up to New Auburn, where I grew up. That's the school there, the football field.
Yeah.
Some of the country out around the farm where I was raised. And so what was different for me was to sit for those things and then have them just retreat with that material and divvy it up as they saw fit. And I wasn't, you know, I'm not, obviously this wasn't some sort of 60-minute situation. but nonetheless, you just don't know what they're going to come up with. And I think probably I saw it live with a bunch of other people in the room at a preview event, so I had no idea what was coming, and I was watching it in real time with a whole bunch of strangers. But I think overall I just was so grateful that they conveyed my gratitude to the people and the place that I'm from, and managed to sneak in a little humor. And I always love humor because humor to me is the best form of self-deprecation.
Yeah.
I try to create from the heart and write from the heart. But I never want people to think I'm taking myself overly seriously. And I think they struck a nice balance. And all in all, honestly, it amounts to a tribute to my parents.
Yeah,
simply wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them and the way they raised us.
Wonderful, wonderful people. What was it? I mean, you do a lot of reflecting anyway, but when you were hauled back to the football field and so forth, was it kind of fun, or did it create anything you hadn't thought about?
No, two things. One, things like the football field is just fun because I loved playing football, and it's the one thing that I clung to a little longer than I should have because I loved playing the game so much and kind of carried with me the idea that, well, maybe I could play in college. And then you pretty quickly find out that, no, that's not going to happen. But I would still, for years, have dreams that I was suited up and playing again, and I'd be so disappointed when I woke up and found out it wasn't real. And those were just fun, silly, goofy memories. And then there were the parts that I was caught off guard by, and this, you know, this is a reflection on Mick Dirks, the guy who led the whole project, that we'd just be talking, and then he'd ask me the right question, and I found myself getting emotional. Nothing sloppy, but choked up and reflective, and that's fine. And then I think, so ultimately, what I just read an interview where I said something about this, so I'm probably repeating myself again and again, but I am at that point in my life, too, where I'm just trying real hard to figure out how to navigate the next period of my life, and I don't want to become bitter or brittle. So on the one hand, honor the past, respect the past, but also be willing to step aside and let the young people go and let the future take what form it will and not just fight everything for the sake of fighting it.
Yeah. That's a tough time.
Yeah, it's not easy sometimes.
You know, no, it isn't. You know, as I was watching the special, I was thinking, man, we actually had a lot of we grew up a lot in the same way on the farm. Mm. The things that we did on the farm were very similar, and a lot of the thoughts you had were very similar for me.
I think I've been fortunate in that sense, in that so I came of age in the 80s, the mid to early 80s is when I was going through high school. And the family farm, you know, there'd been several eras of the family farm declining and it's continued. But the 80s were a pretty significant period for that, the early 80s. And I think what's been fortunate for me is that I don't pretend to be a farmer, but I have, that's my point of reference, no matter what I'm doing. Yeah. And there's a lot of folks out there who maybe are two generations or three generations removed from the farm, but it's still part of your history. And that's a point of relatability, I think, that, you know, sometimes even when I'm in big cities doing events, a certain amount of people are there because they still relate based on that rural point of reference.
Yeah.
And it's also, I worry that I come across as corny. It's probably a little late for that now. But the whole thing about watching my dad farm, and that's how I've approached writing and music and speaking and performing. It's just like, well, figure out what you got to do and go get her done. And I was just up visiting my brother this weekend, and he's a logger with a little small two-man operation, you know, and he had the headers torn off his feller buncher and trying to get it fixed so he can get back out in the woods, you know. And, man, that's work. And that's how I approach writing a book, you know, get up and go just try to get something done on it. And that and my EMS and nursing background, which is triage-based, where you just go, what absolutely has to happen right now in order to keep this thing moving forward.
Michael Perry, our guest today. You enjoy his writing. You enjoy hearing him sing and hearing him speak. Does a lot of things in his life, and I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You talk about yourself. I think here we're probably similar. You talk about yourself as a decent laborer.
Yeah. I just for an interview that I did for the special that's going to air on PBS Wisconsin tonight at 7, I said, I'm about the third or fourth funniest person in the family, but I'm the one who couldn't fix tractors. So I just, you know, my brothers will probably tell you it's a good thing I learned how to type. Because I'm not very good with a wrench. But I distinguish that from the actual labor. I am good at lifting heavy stuff and moving stuff and putting my shoulder to the wheel and just sticking with it all day long. And even now, there's a reason. Again, I can't stress enough, I am not a farmer. But there's a reason I'll go out and make wood all day, because you've got this physical activity, and then at the end of the day, you've got a stack of stuff.
Yeah.
And I do say sometimes where I come from, unless you can stack it or stack with it, it don't count. And I frankly spent a lot of time trying to overcome that sentiment, both outwardly and inwardly. But yeah, I'm not the guy to run the show. I'm not the guy to lead the charge. I never have been, even on the fire department. I'm far better off being second or third man on the hose than wearing a white hat. Even in discussions about social issues, I'm the guy that will lay back and listen and then try to put out something reflective. I'm not the guy to lead the charge. And we need people who lead the charge.
Yeah.
I'm much better. I'm much better just being the guy where they go, hey, go pick that up and put it over there. Okay.
Well, and, you know, the on the farm, I guess one of the fun things was, you know, you're in the spring, you're plowing or whatever, you know, you put your 8-10 hours in or whatever, and you look back and you can see what you did.
I think I've joked about that. I wrote more than one place about when you finish stacking firewood or you finish shoveling the driveway, there's the stand back moment where you step back and you put your hands in your hips and you're like, yeah, just look it over.
Right, that's
the payoff right there. Yeah.
You talk about your parents, and you mentioned earlier that this is kind of a this special sort of honors your parents, and they are special people.
Yeah, I can't. I gave up a long time ago ever pretending or hoping that I would live up to the standard that they set as human beings. They are gentle, thoughtful, reflective, charitable, kind, and those aren't just adjectives. They prove it every day. They've proven it for over 50-plus years of marriage and taking in... I stayed up till 1 in the morning the night of Thanksgiving talking in the kitchen with my mom. It was like I was 17 again. And we just covered everything. And one of the things that I appreciated and was able to tell her was how their door was open. Mm-hmm. They are people of a certain faith and a certain strict set of beliefs, but the door was always open. There was always kindness and charity, not in the condescending sense, in the literal, you can be here and you will be safe. And they modeled that and with just about every move they ever made. And so I'm trailing off because there's no way to convey how important and how humble they've been about it. This special was tricky because they have declined people coming in to tell their story. And even I, in telling it, have sought my mother's approval first, to make sure, not in what I say, I make clear that I'm not on the same page with them on everything when I write, but there's a respect. And there's also me just checking in with her saying, just so you know.
I'm talking about this now.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, you had so many brothers and sisters in so many ways. You had so many foster children. Your parents were wonderful.
Yeah, I think in the special I joke about showing up at the kitchen table and not always recognizing everybody. And it's not even a joke. It's true. And the great line my dad always had when we'd have guests and we sat around this great big table. Matter of fact, the one whole side, it wasn't even chairs. It was just this big, long wooden bench. And you sat there and we'd have guests. And as guests will, the food would come around and they'd take a dainty little serving to be polite. And my dad would say, you better get all you want the first time because it ain't coming around again.
Michael Perry, our guest today, talking with him about his new PBS special tonight at 7 o'clock. What is it called? It's called...
Where I Come From.
Where I Come From.
I sure hope I got that right because if people could have seen my eyes on the radio, they just got really wide.
Well, I forgot, too. We'll make sure that's right. But anyway, I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts and comments for Michael as we move along today. Did you grow up on a farm or in a rural area? How did it shape you? What were your – maybe talk about your favorite chores. I had a couple that I really liked. Michael had a couple he liked and a couple he didn't like. We can talk about that as well at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you today. I'm Larry Mueller. Natalie Guyette, our producer today, Nigel O'Shea, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here visiting today with Michael Perry, New York Times bestselling author and humorist, originally from New Auburn, Wisconsin. Many books, and I've loved every one of them, by golly. Truck, A Love Story, Population 45, a couple that come immediately to mind. But we're talking with him about his PBS special. It's actually Michael Perry, Where I Come From, premieres on PBS Wisconsin, 7 o'clock tonight. So it's great to have him with us. Looking forward to hearing from you. As you join in, call us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Well, you grew up on a farm, but your parents were actually city kids, weren't they?
Yep. My mom and dad are both from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Dad grew up right in the city proper. My mom grew up in the town of Seymour, which used to be outside of Eau Claire. It's rapidly becoming Eau Claire. And very famously, my mother said ever since she was a little girl, she didn't care who she married as long as she didn't marry a farmer. And she said that right through college when she married my father, who had a chemistry degree, and 2 years into the marriage decided he wanted to be a farmer. And they've been on the farm ever since. And she wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah.
So they were city kids. We were very lucky in that that was still, you know, we were still surrounded by small family farms.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of neighbors in particular. That's when you used to pool your machinery, used to hay together, used to plow together, harvest together. And a couple of neighbors in particular took this city kid under their wing and taught him the ways. And one family in particular, we traded labor back and forth on almost a daily basis. And so he was brought into the world of farming by mentors. He wouldn't have called them that, and they wouldn't have called themselves that, but that's what they were.
Well, it's an unusual way to get into farming.
Yeah. Well,
he kept her small, too.
I mean, I think that's how he did it. I was amazed when I look back as an adult who now has children of his own and bills. And he kept it small, and he never got in over his head. And mom never went shopping unless she had a fistful of coupons the size of a bad Uno hand. And fortunately, I've not watched and rewatched the special to the point where I can quote myself at length. But I do believe I speak in there to the idea that we were raised, technically we were poor, but I never went to bed hungry, and I never went to bed wondering if I was loved.
Yeah.
And that's the greatest privilege of all.
It is, and there's where I thought, boy, we had a lot in common because I grew up the same way. Mary Jane in Oconomowoc, we'll give you a chance. Thank you for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. I have followed Michael since his first writing and have thoroughly enjoyed his sense of humor, his perspective on living in the country.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate that you appreciate my sense of humor, because as I said before, that's, you know, I've written long enough now, and I've written enough books, and I've said enough things in public, that you can't always keep everybody happy. But I always figure that if I throw in a little humor there, I hope the message gets through that I'm not taking myself that seriously. It doesn't mean I don't care about things, and it doesn't mean that I don't try to be serious about serious things, but we all need a little pressure relief. And where I come from, that usually comes in the form of humor. So.
Yeah. Mary Jane, thank you so much. Appreciate your call.
Just to share another little piece, and I know you have callers, but when you talk about getting work done, I think that's the piece that my parents taught us. There were five of us, and everybody needed to do their share, and some a little more than others. But the oldest of the five, you talk about not leading. I didn't have a choice. I had to be out there getting it done because somebody had to tell the others what to do.
You know, that's funny because very quickly, several of my siblings, I was the oldest, but several of my siblings surpassed me talent-wise, skill-wise. But in the special, there is a piece about a very specific role I had to fill because I was the oldest. And I understand that. There was a particular situation where Dad couldn't leave the farm and someone was needed. And so I do relate to that idea of being the oldest, but I also relate to the idea of being the oldest and watching my brothers just roll their eyes and say, give me that wrench.
Thank you, Mary Jane. Diana and Alma Center, we'll go to you now. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. I just wanted to share a couple of comments. I grew up in small town Wisconsin as well. I used to refer to myself as the D-minus farmer in the family because nice. I would be the last. If they were, you know, the kickball team was being picked, I'd be the last farmer picked in the list. And left for a long time, was a public school teacher in a bunch of different places around the country. But my students used to say things like, do you ever not want to come to work today? And I would just kind of sit there and smile and be like, you know, this isn't work exactly, you know, I know what work is, and this is something else. And I really value the sense of kind of work ethic that I got on the farm. It isn't work that I wanted to do. And boy, was I glad to go to, I also went to UW-Eau Claire and to be off the farm and live in the world of ideas, but man, I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah.
So, thank you for the story. Much appreciated.
Oh, thank you. That whole work ethic thing, it's a double-edged sword. I have a book called Montaigne in Barn Boots, and I wrote about that at greater length in that book, because on the one hand, I'm absolutely with you. I wear logging boots to almost all of my public events, and partly just because I like boots, but also partly so that when I'm signing books and someone says, "You must be really tired," I look at my boots and I think about my brother, and he truly is physically worn out at the end of the day. On the other hand, I've gotten a little crankier about this as I've gotten older. Occasionally, I will hear people denigrating the arts or denigrating certain endeavors. And I say, you know, I have a full-time personal assistant. I have two booking agents. I create a lot of sales tax up there in Eau Claire County. And I don't have, you know, I'm going to stop right there before I overdo it. But the point is, I do know what it is to work hard also in and to be responsible. And honestly, my wife and I have a little family business is what this is. And anyway, as I said, I this is tricky because you can so easily come off as self-righteous. But I have learned to stick up a little bit for the fact that not all work is evident by having calloused hands.
Yeah.
I do have three calluses, but they're where I push on the guitar strings.
Well, speaking of the guitar string, you know, you talk about... I don't know if it was your saying or somebody told you, you write from the heart with your eye on the mortgage.
Yeah, that I wrote that, and that's true. Yeah, I try very hard to never forget the absolute pure joy I felt the first time my seventh grade English teacher turned me loose to write whatever I wanted. And I never realized I wanted to do that until she gave me the chance. And to this day, before I came here today, I finished a column. And there are... That's a perfect example because the bottom line is it had to be turned in this morning. So that's the commerce part of it. It's a job. It's one I'm grateful to have. If I don't meet the mark, I don't continue to have that job. So I'm very matter of fact about that part. But even in that column, 560 some words, there were a couple of lines where I worked really, really hard to try and convey exactly what I was feeling. And I still get the same thrill out of that work as I did in seventh grade when I wrote a really horrible little three-line poem. So, yeah, always balancing that, keeping the kids fed and also serving art when I can.
Diana, thanks again. John in Sturgeon Bay, we'll go to you now. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. Great program. I grew up in Milwaukee in the 70s and had a family cabin up on Highway 40 on Island Lake. And so growing up and riding in the back of the station wagon, that New Auburn exit held special meaning for me. But anyways, I had a question about hunting. And it, you know, growing up, my dad and my grandpa always talked about, oh, farmers, they don't hunt. They don't have time to hunt. You know, they'll either let you on their land or they won't. And it was, and over the years, I guess I kind of would almost agree with the fact that it seemed like a lot of family farms, hunting wasn't a priority. You were either all in or many just didn't really get into it. What's your take on that? And how did you grow up when it comes to kind of the family farm and the old annual deer season?
Well, I grew up in a family that was all in on deer hunting, although it predated my father being on a farm. He actually grew up a city kid who would go up north and hunt with his uncle, who was a farmer up by Spooner. So I was born into a family that my father and my grandfather and my great uncle would get together and go hunting every November. And so I just recently counted. I have not missed a deer season since third grade. I skipped school in third grade to go deer hunting, and I wasn't old enough to actually carry a rifle, but and I have not missed an opening day since, including this recent opening day when I sometimes hang out with dissolute artists and musicians and whatnot, and I missed a meeting, and they scheduled a festival for the opening weekend of deer season. And sometimes my artist friends, I got to get them the memo. But I was up till 2 in the morning with artful folk. And by gosh, at 6 a.m. the next morning, I awoke and got into the woods for at least a few hours so that I could keep the streak alive. But also with us, I went up and hunted with my brothers and dad a little bit this week. I mostly hunt on my own little farm now. But I'm very much, you know, our little family of four, we eat venison year-round. We process it all. It never leaves the back 40, except to come into the shed, and I skin and quarter it, and then we process it, make chops, sometimes make our own sausage. And so to me, it's primarily a way to get some local food. I still love being in the woods. It's my 1 week where I don't book anything except, unfortunately, timed music and art festivals. But yeah, to me, and again, a discussion that I'm not prepared to have right now, a lot has changed about hunting, and it's, I still like getting a big buck if one comes along, but I don't want that to drive why I'm out there.
John, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Anita in Wisconsin Dells, it's your turn. Hi. Anita, are you there? No, oh, maybe we lost Anita. I thought it didn't look like we lost her. Well, let's try Nancy in Grafton.
Well, good morning. When I was a little kid, I grew up in Marathon County, town of Cleveland, on a 160-acre farm. And my dad, you know, the roads never got plowed, and we couldn't get through to our driveway couldn't get plowed. So anyhow, my dad would hook us up to the stone boat, which he cleaned out the barn in the afternoon, and he put new straw in there and a new horse blanket, and we jumped in there, and we went 2 miles over to our school. There was three in my class, I think 23 in the whole school. Anyway, we got to school, but when I was 14, then my a drunk driver hit my dad's car, and my mother was killed in the car accident, and I had to take over. I was the oldest of six kids on the farm, and the next day was my sister Mary's birthday, and our baby was only three at the time, and my mother wasn't there anymore to bake bread or wash clothes in the wringer washer and so forth, so or go to town and get groceries. So when I was 16, I went to get my driver's license, went to Stratford, and the constable was the one where he went, not to a cops or anything, but constable. Anyway, I had 3 out of 100 wrong out of my questions. He said, "You don't have to take a road test. I know you've been driving for a couple of years anyway. Here's your license." And I never got a ticket so far.
So many things you
but
said.
My dad raised us 106, you know, all six of us on that farm. We all grew up. We all got married. We all stayed married. We all had kids. We all stayed going to church. I'm the oldest one, and we're all still here yet. My dad did one heck of a job. He was a son of a gun. He was a wonderful fellow, and God, you know, it wasn't the easy job,
but he did it.
He did it. So,
well, Nancy, thanks so much. A comment.
Yeah, so many things she said struck a chord with me. And in particular, the 160-acre farm, that's exactly the acreage that my dad had, although I think only about 80 of it were farmable. The rest was swamp and woods. But also, when she talked about the storm, we just had a storm, as many people listening have, and we lost our power for 24 hours. We were out on this dead-end road, and my 12-year-old daughter was so excited because she said, "We're going to play cards by candlelight next to the wood stove." And I just it flashed me back to those times when we lost power out on the farm. And instead of being worried or scared or sad because this or that wouldn't work, it was a moment to kind of slow down, gather in, and take care of the basics and enjoy each other's company. So I appreciated the memory she evoked there.
Nancy, thank you again for calling. Sam in Delavan will go to you now. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Larry. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind today?
I've got a question from Michael. I think, Larry, you interviewed Michael maybe about 6 months ago for a special.
May have, yeah.
And at that time, he had a quote that I don't believe was his, but it was from somebody else about tractors, like a one-line quote about tractors being the memory of childhood or something like that. And I've been trying to figure out what that quote was, actually, for a friend of mine who's listening out in Colorado right now.
So here's the bad news is I can't remember the quote. The good news is I know where it is. And it's something that I did indeed write, but I can't quote it because I've written a lot of things, some quotable, some not. But it was on one of those How You Doing or Clodhopper Reports. Oh, and it was the one where I think if you Google around Clodhopper Report, tractors, and I think it's on that one, the one where I finish up by standing in a manure spreader reciting poetry.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
But I think it was something about tractors are time machines of the heart or something like that. So I'm sorry that I can't rattle it off, but I think I've given you some clues to work with.
Yeah, Sam, does that help you out there?
That was for sure it, and I will do the research and...
All right.
We'll be thanking you as well.
Also, that reminds me, so on this special that's going to air tonight on PBS Wisconsin, it opens with a beautiful shot of me driving around our little farm with a tractor, which for the record is owned by my mother-in-law. So don't call me a farmer. When we did the live events, as soon as it was over and they did the Q&A, I'd say, before you had any questions, that just in the interest of full disclosure, I have to tell you, that's not my tractor. It's my mother-in-law's tractor.
Oh, Sam, thanks again. Well, Anita in Wisconsin Dells will give you a chance. Hi, Anita.
Hi there. I just love listening to you, Michael, and reading your information because you seem real. There are a lot of people that now it's the socially elite that are going and living on the farm, but you're real. And I'm getting up there in age, and I remember growing up on a small family farm, and I remember all of those wonderful experiences. Not everything was wonderful, but I ended up being a school teacher, came back home one summer, and by gosh, that Norwegian bachelor farmer that lived up the road, he'd gotten so darn good looking and nice. and you know, we've been farming for almost 70 years.
Oh, man.
I have wonderful memories. Our two sons, after they graduated from college, their dream was to come home to the family farm. But you know what? We're losing about 800 family dairy farms in Wisconsin every year. And I believe that the family dairies were good for the land, good for the water, good for the community, and good for the school and the small businesses. What do you think's going to happen if we can't sustain some of this in the future?
Well, I'm certainly not an expert, but I've lived what you're talking about. I remember when our family farm was surrounded by other family farms and little dairy farms. My dad, again, raising all those kids with a herd of Holsteins, 18 milk cows he had, which is, you know, not even worth noticing these days. Some of my reaction ties back to what I talked about earlier in this interview, which is trying to not become bitter or brittle and to understand that things have always changed. It's funny, when I wrote the book Population 485 about my hometown of New Auburn, New Auburn, if you trace back the name of New Auburn back through the centuries, it originates from a poem written by a guy named Oliver Goldsmith. And he wrote that poem in the 1700s in England, and he was bemoaning the loss of the rural life in the 1700s and how the city was encroaching. So these themes have certainly, they are recurring. That said, there's no getting around the fact that things have changed drastically and continue to change at a drastic pace. I don't have all the answers except to say there are places for hope. I think people are reconsidering what it means to have local food, to even know where your food is sourced, whether it's organic or whether it's even just the farmer down the road. He may not be certified organic, but he'll show you exactly what his operation is. We have an influx of women into farming, and I think anytime that happens, that's a positive disruption. And so there are glimmers of hope. Some things I don't understand. You know, it's great to be big and to make everything cheap, and I also know what it is to be frugal. I know what it is to not have excess money to throw around. Having said that, it food security issues always intrigue me, in that if you're putting all your, to use a metaphor, if you're putting all your eggs into one gigantic basket, man, it seems like it's easy to dump that big basket. But I very quickly am in over my head with these things. But so my reaction is somewhere in between there, where there are people out there doing it quietly and doing the best they can. And I wish I could snap my fingers. I can't.
Thank you, Anita. And Germit and Harrisonville, I'm sorry, or Harrisville.
Good morning. Yeah. Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm a fan of Mr. Perry's. I followed his work since his very first book. I'm looking forward to the program tonight on public TV. I just want to thank him first of all, for his work, but also for encouraging me to write my own stories about my own life. I grew up in a farm community in the 30s and 40s, and just recently completed a 400-page book about my own life. I've been sharing it with friends and family, and I would encourage everybody else that has that urge to do something about writing to do it. So thank you very much, Mr. Perry, for motivating me.
Well, and I thank you for actually putting those words down, because I do get the question a lot, almost weekly, how do I get a book published, or how do I get a publisher or an agent? And my answer to people is just, first of all, get it written down. I self-published my first four books. And the other reason I tell people to get it written down, and I'm thinking now is, you know, this Anita, the previous caller, asked a question that I'm just, you know, I'm just not equipped to answer definitively. But one of the things you can do to preserve things is just write them down so that at least they're not forgotten. And, you know, I told people that for years, thinking it was good advice, but not really thinking about it. And then one day somebody came up to me and said, we want to thank you for telling, you know, my husband was a farmer and he wanted to write a book. And you said, just get it down. Don't worry about how it looks or if it's beautiful writing. Just get it down. And then he was taken unexpectedly from them. And they said the words that he left behind had become such a family treasure. And so I would just end by saying, whether it's Anita, whether it's Germit, I'm just so grateful that people are getting these histories down, because whatever happens in the future, we're going to need to refer back to those who preceded us for their advice and example.
And your PBS special tonight, it covers kind of your early years, but then
it's
at the end quickly gets you up
to the present.
It's where I come from, so I think it was funny because partway through I kind of forgot that was the whole point. And then when I saw it, I went, oh, that's right. It's about where I came from, not about what I think about right now. And so it was lovely and reflective. Yeah.
Well, it's a wonderful
I got to
show.
Thank a bunch of my public school teachers.
Yeah.
That meant a lot to me because, man, like, and I'm so thrilled that they included the teacher who taught me how to type. Because I took that, I was a knucklehead, man, and I got good grades, but I didn't work very hard to get them. And if there was an easy path, I took it. And I remember taking that typing class thinking, well, you know, I can just fiddle around in here and pull off a decent grade, whatever. And in spite of that, she taught me how to type, and now I do it every day.
Well, I'm going to mention Eleanor Dahl today because she was my first through sixth grade teacher. And she was a wonderful inspiration for me, too. So I'm glad Eleanor was a great teacher, just as you had in your schools. And that special is great. Michael, thank you so much. It's 7 o'clock tonight.
Yeah, and if you go to sneezingcow.com, we've got a page up right now with a link to where if you can't get it over your TV, you can stream it in real time, you know, if you're outside the broadcast area. And then, of course, go to PBS Wisconsin's website as well.
Are you doing it? Have you got another book in the works?
I've got two under contract, and I got to get some hunker down time.
Michael, in the meantime, we'll curl up in front of the television tonight and watch your special. 7 o'clock. Thanks, Michael. Michael Perry, his new special is called Michael Perry, Where I Come From. It premieres tonight at 7 o'clock. Sneezingcow.com if you're not able to see it.
Yep, there will be info there. You bet.
Info there. Always great to have him and come by, and he'll be back again. I sure hope. Well, he will. You'll be back, won't you?
If the creek don't rise.
There we go. Oh, well, he's an author, and he's a darn good one. And there are a lot of good authors out there, many good Wisconsin authors. As a matter of fact, I love having Wisconsin authors on the show, as a matter of fact, to kind of highlight their work. Daniel Golden is the owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, and we're going to talk with him next about the best books to give as gifts in this holiday season. I'm Larry Mueller.